Unit 2. One chance. The tiny antique silver pin lay in my hand. I stared hard at the solemn face looking back at me from the oval frame. I was looking for some resemblance between my ancestor and myself. Her brow was broad and strong, the eyes kind and forgiving. She wore a stiff black bonnet, a high white collar, and a coarsely woven shawl around her shoulders. In examining her face more closely, maybe I could identify some similarity around the eyes and the nose. An inner strength shone from the eyes of this diminutive lady who had helped lead her family from Ireland to the New World. The times in Ireland during the 1770s were difficult for everyone. John and Lily Love and all the tenants of the Baron's Court estate were suffering after terrible floods destroyed their crops. The landlord was generous in allowing the land rent to fall into arrears due to the difficult times. However, as weather conditions continued to worsen, the little family became pessimistic and felt desperate about the direction of their lives. Nearly every family at this time had at least one member of their family who had left for the New World. The ugly face of famine was lurking everywhere. It was not possible with 1 acre of arable land to make a living. Late one night, after the children were in bed, John and Lily discussed the possibility of making a reservation aboard a sailing ship bound for America. John had noticed a poster in the town square that, posted by a ship's owner trying to recruit people for his ship. John knew that conditions aboard ship would not be ideal for Lily, her new infant son, and the 2 elder boys. However, she acknowledged that settling in America would be the only way for the family to gain some independence and earn a living. More importantly, it was rumored that land was free in the new country. Lily gave her consent to leave. In port, the sailing ship Hannah, under the command of Captain Mitchell, lay at anchor. The adventure of crossing the Atlantic Ocean, bound for Philadelphia, could take 2 to 3 months. Passengers were assured there would be the best provisions and plenty of barrels of fresh water. Storms could be fierce, and living conditions below deck would be primitive. John joined the long queue and eventually, after a lengthy wait, reached the revenue table. He affixed his signature to the contract, promising to pay £5 per person for berths aboard ship. The clerk returned the receipt to John, indicating that the sum of money had been paid. Once under sail, the 300 passengers found themselves crowded into miserable conditions. The smell of so many people crowded together was offensive. The breadth of the vessel was narrow, and the headroom below deck minimal. As the tiny craft sailed out of Loo Foyle and entered the Atlantic Ocean, it started to roll ominously, and those aboard wondered if they would survive the long voyage ahead or be swallowed by the enormous waves. Seasickness was everywhere, and people had no appetite. The food, instead of being of high quality as promised, was too often rotten, and the water was brackish. Eventually, the winds lessened, and the captain was able to set his sights toward America and become ably steering the ship on an even course. 8 weeks later, plus 1 day, the Hannah made landfall, and the Love family disembarked in America and became American newest immigrants. Gazing at the mainland after so many days of sailing was indeed a glorious sight. The difficult days aboard ship seemed worthwhile. Porters hurried about the docks pushing baggage. Little girls with ribbons in their hair scanned the ship's decks, hoping to find a glimpse of their father arriving. It seemed to Lily that it took forever to register and pass through immigration. John said that he would go ahead to scout out some land in the far west of the state. He would push on to the frontier with a bunch of other Irish chaps. Lily and the children could follow more slowly, harnessing the horse and cart to convey their scanty possessions. The stuff in the cart would include a kettle, dishes, blankets, a chair, a bucket, and an axe. There was a perception by the government at this time that the feisty Irish would resist any hostile natives refusing to retreat and thus maintaining the western boundary. The Irish, too, were pleased to settle as far away from the government as possible. Instead of purchasing land, they would squat on the property, erecting only a temporary humble shelter to stave off the weather. Once their families arrived, they would inspire the men to build proper cabins. Neither fancy nor elegant, these log structures would be their first real homes. Property boundaries at this time were not marked out with iron rods or stakes in a standard fashion, but rather designated by natural objects, such as rocks, trees, and creeks. Confusion and disputes must often have followed later, when these survey points disappeared. After exploring the area around Shirleysburg, John and his sons rode over Sandy Ridge to survey the property below Black Log Mountain. It was here, in a long, narrow valley, they decided to settle. The valley became known then, and is still called, Love's Valley today. At the time, drums were used to forewarn that the natives were going to capture the forts, which guarded the western frontier. Daily life in this new land, for the early settlers, was harsh and difficult. First, they needed to tame the land, chopping down trees in order to be able to plant crops. At times, they needed to defend their land and be wary of attacks from wild animals, such as wolves and bears. Mosquito bites caused severe reaction of swelling and itchiness. Once the work was done, neighbors would gather for an occasional social function. The children would play for hours, chasing butterflies and looking for birds' nests. The boys would catch frogs and then tease the girls with them. There would be a delicious picnic lunch spread on the grass. John asked Lily to bring some freshly squeezed lemon juice for the picnic. He found the sour taste of the lemonade was refreshing on a hot summer's day. Some of the men would have a drink of homemade in the moonshine before striking up a tune on the fiddle. Square dancing was popular among the young people, and the young lads would leap up to dance with the eligible young ladies. Rivals for a young lady's hand in marriage would tend to compete to walk her home at the end of an evening. The romantic times were few and contrasted sharply with the stern reality of everyday life. Neighbors were also few, and Lily found she was very lonely. She looked forward to the occasional visits of the minister, Robert Ayres, who was a Methodist circuit rider. Meetings would be held in fields or small barns 3 to 4 times a year. At other times, neighbor women from over the mountain would meet to make quilts, blankets, and cushions, and to gossip about their respective lives. They would share their secret fears regarding their new lives, their hopes for their children's future, and enjoy each other's companionship. 20 years slipped by, and John Love died at the early age of 47. Several years later, son James and his family, as well as widow Lily, his mother, made the decision to leave Pennsylvania and settle in Canada. They made the arduous trek over Indian trails, crossing the Niagara River to settle in what we now call Ontario. I am a Canadian, Having traced my roots and followed in the footsteps of these early settlers, I feel a sense of gratitude to my ancestors, who faced extreme difficulties and severe hardship to settle in a new land. Liberty then and in today's world is a priceless inheritance. Once more, I glanced at the silver pin before returning it to the velvet box. Once again, I questioned, what did I inherit from my love ancestors? I realize the answer has been revealed while writing this story. I have determination, strength, loyalty, and a love of adventure. This is my inheritance.